الحمد لله وكفى وسلام على عباده الذين اصطفى. أما بعد، فقد قال الله تبارك وتعالى: أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها الذين آمنوا كتب عليكم الصيام كما كتب على الذين من قبلكم لعلكم تتقون أياما معدودات. صدق الله المولانا العظيم. As far as our معمولات are concerned, what was the last one you mentioned? Jee, the beginning and the end. Every day, a person who can read every day the full surah, that is the most best. And if you can't manage so much, then at least the first 10 ayahs every morning, last 10 ayahs every night, and Juma, try and read the whole surah. And then in the morning to try and read Surah Yasin Sharif. Surah Yasin Sharif, it has come in the hadith, إِنَّ لِكُلِّ شَيْءٍ قَلْبًا وَقَلْبُ الْقُرْآنِ الْيَاسِينِ. Everything has got a heart, and the heart of the Quran is Yasin. A person who reads Yasin Sharif gets the thawab of reading Quran Sharif 10 times. As though we read the whole Quran Sharif 10 times, so much thawab we get. A person who reads Yasin Sharif in the morning, his needs for the day are fulfilled. And there are many other great, great virtues of Yasin Sharif. And it has been always the practice of all the mashayikh and the righteous people to read Yasin Sharif. If Yasin Sharif is not in my life, I must feel that there is a great nooks, there is a great harm in my life. Yasin Sharif must be in my life daily. And if we keep on reading it, those who don't know it off by heart will learn it and make an effort to learn it off by heart. So even if we do, then we're not dependent that we must have a Quran Sharif or the Yasin Sharif where it's written. We can read it while driving, etc. also. All wazaif, the best is to set one place and read them. With wudu, faith, and qibla. But if we can't, even while walking around, etc., we can read it also. But with that, all our dhikr, wazaif, some of it too, sitting fixed at one place and with full concentration. And if we can do all our dhikr like that, then it is the mubarak. So Yasin Sharif, we should try and read also every morning preferably. There are verses of reading it during the course of the day, at night also. But most of our elders prescribe for Yasin Sharif to be read in the morning. After Yasin Sharif, du'as are readily accepted also. That is why in Ramadan we have it at Zohar time. Because after that we make ijtimai du'a, and to give support and to strengthen our du'a, the Asma'ul Husna and Yasin Sharif, by which with regard to Asma'ul Husna, Allah says, this is narrated fully to Walidai Asma'ul Husna, Fad'uhu Biha. Allah has got Asma'ul Husna, make dua to him by the zariyah, by the intercession of the Asma'ul Husna. As far as wasila is concerned, there are many things, many people we can make wasila. But of course, the Quran Sharif and the names of Allah, what can be a stronger wasila by Allah Ta'ala? And it comes in the hadith, Inna lillahi tis'an wa tis'ina ithman. Man ahsaha dakhal al jannah. Wa fi riwayati man hafidaha. Allah has got 99 names. A person who reads them or a person who memorizes them, that person will enter Jannah. So Yasin Sharif is very, very valuable, and that gives us trophy. With regard to our subject of trying to keep perfect roza, and our duty is to try. As Maulana Panampuri Rahmatullah used to say, try by the day and cry by the night. During the day we must try. And that is Ya Yuhal Muddathir, Qum Fa'andir. In the day is the day's effort. And at night is Ya Yuhal Muzzammil, Qumil Layl Illa Qadila. is the night's effort. In the day is the effort on the creation, and at night is the effort with Allah Ta'ala, to turn Allah's attention. And all the time we must be conscious of our own Islam also. Not for one moment must a person be unmindful of his own Islam. Even if we make bayans for the Islam of people, first and foremost make your own niyat. And then you will be surprised yourself from your own bayan how much you benefit. And so make always our niyat ourselves. It is said wisely by our elders that a person who is unmindful of his own Islam, ye muslih kya hoga, ye salih kya hoga, nahi. Ye muslih kya hoga, salih bhi nahi rahega. A person who is not worried of his own Islam, even for one moment, forget him being a muslih, making the Islam of other people. He won't even be a salih, a pious, righteous person himself. And a person who is of this nature, always worried of others, and then he's not worried of himself, pride comes in him. He thinks, ana, ana, wala, ghayri. It's only me, there's nobody else. And any enamored from Allah, he starts thinking, my effort, which me, I've achieved this. And such a person, ye, jo apne aap ko mustaqim, bhi zaat samajhta hai, that I don't need any guidance. And a person who stays without a sheikh also. If one sheikh has passed away, ulama buzurgs have written that when a husband passes away, the iddat is 4 months and 10 days. And when the sheikh passes away, the iddat is 3 days. More than 3 days, don't stay without a sheikh. Have a sheikh. If you are already at advanced age and your tarbiyat was done already, but still keep a roof, keep somebody over you. And if not, buzurgs have suggested, then at least make mashura with the seniors of your time. Don't trust yourself. And if they aren't seniors, you have reached that age, the age now, you are born quite old, and they aren't any seniors, then with your contemporaries. Make mashura with them. And if they have your contemporaries, for any reason you cannot, they say even with your juniors, but make mashura. Don't stay without mashura. Apne aap ko mustaqil bhi zaat mat samjho. But unfortunately today, person who is murid also, he's got his share, but he still does his own thing. He thinks himself as mustaqil bhi zaat. No contact with the share, no mashura with the share. Whatever he wants to, he does it on his own. So it's very important to make mashura. And the actual thing is to give your matters in the hands of somebody you have full trust in. And that person guides you. Our minds will tell us, and this Western mind of ours which are formed, that you are sufficient for yourself. You don't have to ask anyone. You know your needs. You know what you want to do. So you don't have to ask anyone. That is totally wrong. That is not the way of our deen. Always you will ask. And suggest, I have this in mind, and I've got these reasons, but always take advice. One, a group of people were going on a journey, so they asked one Ali for some advice. So he told them, don't eat elephant meat. So this thing just never crossed our mind also, we don't eat elephant meat, and it never crossed our mind. Say, I also don't know why I'm telling you, but this is my advice I'm giving you. Don't eat elephant meat. They went, they got lost in the desert, and they became extremely hungry, very, very hungry. And they found a baby elephant. So to overpower the baby elephant wasn't a big task for them. They killed it. One person reminded them also. What is that? We asked him advice. What advice he gave us? They said, but we are too desperate. We are very hungry. We can't help it. So they killed it and they started eating, but he did not eat. After eating, the effect of it was that he went into a deep slumber. They all fell asleep in very deep slumber. A herd of elephants came that way. And the mother of that elephant, baby elephant, was with that herd of the elephant. And they were looking for that elephant. They saw the people. The mother came and she smelled each one. And who she got the smell of her baby, that elephant's meat, she put her one leg on it and with her trunk ripped him apart, to draw him apart. All of them. When she came to this one here, she smelled him, nothing wrong with him. And he was okay, he passed. She lifted him up and put him on her back. And then she walked to a fruit tree. And there let him eat fruit to his full. After he ate to his full, then she took him onto the main road, where all the people travel and pass by, and she dropped him there. So the advice that we take, if that perhaps it doesn't make sense, who of us think, how many people, they were given this advice, that the thing don't do this, and they never do it, and they never think that they will do it. It's out of the, it's not in the agenda, in the least worst, but doesn't come in the radar. But it happens then after. So Allah give us topics to take advice, inshallah. So with regard to our rozas of the eyes that we must keep, very, very important. And to reach perfection, which Allah Ta'ala says, قُلْ لِلْمُؤْمِنِينَ يَغُضُّ مِنْ أَبْصَارِهِمْ وَيَحْفَظُ فُرُوجَهُمْ. Say to the believing man, then they must cast their gazes down, lower. And just see how beautiful the Quran didn't say, close your eyes, lower your gazes. Such a way that you don't see what you don't have to see. And if you close your eyes, you can make an accident. So we are not ordered to close our eyes, we are ordered to lower our gazes. And the natural effect of that is that your private parts will be safe. Then there is the only danger, there is a great connection. And if you don't look after your gazes, you are going to get involved. What your case is, it's Sahmum, means the harm, Iblis, must move. In the same way, music, al-zina, ruqiyatu zina. Music is a stepping stone for zina. The person, the music falls on his ears, even unintentionally, he doesn't intend to listen. But his workplace is such, wherever he is and continuously listening to music, it will create the desire of zina within a person. If a person is on the phone and when they put you on hold and they got some music playing, it's going to have an effect on a person. So all these things we must avoid completely. So the looks also, and this is one command, قُلْ لِلْمُؤْمِنِينَ, where Allah gave it for the woman separately. Otherwise, all the commands, أَقِيمُوا الصَّلَاةَ, all of you perform the mass, men and women, both are included in that command. كُتِبَ عَلَيْكُمُ الصِّيَامُ, men and women, both are included in عَلَيْكُمُ, for the wuzat is first. وَأَتِمُّوا الْحَجَّ وَالْعُمْرَةَ لِلَّهِ, men and women all. But for this year, the gazer, Allah made it two separate commands. For the men, Allah addressed them separately, and for the woman separately. From that we can gauge how important. That Allah Ta'ala addressed the men first year. The reason for that is, the men are usually the bigger culprits when in the matter of zina and adultery. Women by nature, they have got modesty. There is a different thing also with this Western civilization, that modesty has been ripped out of them. And they also have become bold. Before it was impossible to think of a woman making an advance to a man. It was always the man, the boy, who made advances to girls and to women. But women shouldn't. Though they should perhaps have their desire, but they were too reserved. But the Western civilization has ripped out their modesty completely. And today they also openly make advances to men. So, all these things we have to take deep into consideration. Yeah, Allah refers to the man first and then the woman. And when it comes to zina, that azaniyatu was zani. The punishment for zina, Allah mentioned the woman first. Because it was least expected from her that she would commit zina. So Allah mentioned her first there. The Quran Sharif, the tafsir, where the Quran Sharif has told, قُلِ أَوْحَيْنَا إِلَى النَّحْلِ أَنِ اتَّقِدِي مِنَ الْجِبَالِ بُيُوتَ, that Allah Ta'ala says, we send a message, ilham to the bee, and everywhere all the sifas that are used are addressing the female. That was in the 7th century. Only now, in the last 50 years or so, has science discovered that all the bees that go and look for pollen and cornel, all this air, all the things what they take, all it is the female bee that does that. Making of the honey is all the female bee. And the Quran addressed all the female bees, didn't address the male. So the Quran says, even in beekeeping, there is no advanced textbook, technology than what the Quran Sharif has got. And these people were totally amazed that in the 7th century, this was already announced. And they are only discovering it now in this century, in the last century. Scientific discoveries have come more to the fore the last century and this century. وَجِبَالَ أَوْتَادَ Quran Sharif says we have made the mountains peg in the ground. It was only in the 1960s that the science discovered when they take some reading from the ground, when they get to the foot of the mountain, there is a different reading completely. This made them study the whole thing. And then they found that these mountains all have got roots in them. And these roots go deep into the ground. And there are mountains in the sea also. And those mountains also have got roots. And they found that it is these mountains which the Quran Sharif says, we have put them as pegs. And then they discovered deep down on right at the bottom of the earth, the ocean, there are huge steel plates, about 200 kilometers thick steel plates. And they, the whole, all the seas and the continent are resting on them. And if they have to move a little bit, earthquakes, for volcanoes. All this are when there is a 1 millimeter, one slight movement in those steel plates that causes a volcano. That causes all these other things. So, and the mountains are keeping them on place. And when the Quran Sharif says, when Qiyamah will come, the mountains will fly. Yeah, and the mountains, the murru, marma, sahar, they will fly like a cotton wool, like clouds they will fly. So then there won't be that control. So you can imagine what chaos will take place. It comes, Qiyamah will take place on the worst type of people. When there won't be one person saying Allah, so no Muslims will be there. And you can imagine, yeah, if two planes collide, two trains, two ships, therefore, the whole world will be colliding with one another. The sun, the moon, the stars, what will it be? Man will be, his mind, what azab that will be on its own. And all this is in the Qudrat, and Allah says many places, all this whole system is kept in place only by the command of Allah. Allah's one, how great, how mighty, how all powerful Allah is. His one commandment, that this whole thing, and Allah is keeping it in place. So anyway, all these matters, Allah Ta'ala, let us understand the depth of the Quran Sharif. Yeah, Allah mentioned the man first, and then the woman. As far as the punishment of zina, Allah mentioned the woman first, then the man. And see also that Allah Ta'ala has given the right, the share of all people. يُسْرِيكُمُ اللَّهُ فِي أَوْلَادِكُمْ which is a challenge to learn it also, the mutashabihat, etc. And for the muftis also, it's always a challenge. And to the miras, mithala, which you should only ask, and only that mufti should give answers to inheritance queries, which always involved in it. If you have one day's absence, one week's absence, like it is said in the Quran Sharif, if you neglect it for one day, 1 week Quran will leave you. And if you leave the Quran for a week, it will leave you for a month. And if you read it for a month, it will leave you for a year. And if you leave the Quran for a year, it will leave you for life. So Quran Sharif never, in the 40 famous hadith of Hazrat Salman, will Quran, la tadahu fi kulli yawmi, never leave the Quran Sharif 1 day also. Every day make tilawat of Quran Sharif. Quran Sharif is such a kitab that jayyid hafiz, and afterwards they couldn't read Quran. Inside Nazra they couldn't read. And don't think this is far-fetched. Very sad that almost generally all our youngsters, they attend Makatib till grade 7 now, standard 5. So about 7 years they attend. And then when they come to high school, their mothers become too high. And they think now we are very high. And now we are too big to go to Maktab. And generally they leave Maktab by that time. And then for 5 years high school, and they don't go to Maktab, and they don't touch Quran also generally. Very, very few will touch Quran. They got nothing to do with masjid, with madrasa, with namaz also. Exceptional cases only. After that, if they start working or they go to university, even worse, for another at least 5-8 years. And then when they want to get married, and now if they want to start reading, they find difficulty reading Quran inside. The alphabet also they have forgotten. And then you start losing hope, and you become, then you turn further away from deen, and then you go in the complete wrong direction. So it's very, very important to keep contact on what point you can. The Mufti was a miras also. If you are not continuously in it, it is such a tricky subject. You have to be continuously in it. Then you can. The simple, straightforward, the zakari must misli hazal hun sayin. That is a straightforward thing. That's not difficult. But there are so many things that this one gets cut out. This one because of that one gets a different share. It's a very, very intricate. And it's also a sign, a person who wants to is intrigued by math, let him study inheritance and see what the subject it is and how it opens your brains also. So anyway, there that half is given to the girl compared to the boy. So practically, let us take one example. A father, for example, passes away, he left a son, he left a daughter. And he left his inheritance, the son's share, for example, comes to 100,000. So what will be the girl's share? 50,000, half of it. Now what does it look like? The son got more, the boy got less. The son, boy, go out and work, they earn. Girl, Islam teaches, stay at home, you don't earn. So she, it looks like it's unfair distribution, because she has got less. And she can't earn more, because Islam says stay at home, generally don't earn also. You are permitted to, at home you can earn, but the man will go out and earn. So it looks like an unfair distribution. And this is what they are playing, all the feminists and all these people, rights of the woman, etc. But to now just analyze it, so say they are both around about 20 years, 20, 25. The boy gets married. One major marriage is going to, expense is going to have this marriage, meher. And meher, today meher fatmi worth around about 50,000. So he has to pay 50,000. So how much is he left with? 50. And then he has to make walima. And if you make walima, if you invite 50 people, 100 rand per person, or whatever else, 100 people, 100 rand per person, how much does that work out? 10,000, 20,000, so that he has to provide accommodation for the woman. He has to get a house, pay rent, or buy a house, and then furnish the house. It's all his responsibility. Everything, feed the house, the wife. Not only give her food, it's actually his duty to arrange ready-made food for her. It's not her duty to cook even for herself. It's not her duty to cook for her husband or her children or her children also. Her duty is for her, it's the husband's duty to see that he arranges meals according to Sharia, strictly speaking. Though Sharia itself has made the way, the practical way, when Nabi alayhi salatu went, salatu wasalam went to Hazrat Fatima at night when she was married and explained the duty of Hazrat Ali and Hazrat Fatima. And then he said the man's duty is outside, he must go out and earn. The woman's duty is at home. She must stay at home and look after the home. And that is have been the practical life of Muslims all along. that Muslims stay at home, but strictly speaking, it's not the woman's duty that she cooks, it's the husband's duty to arrange the food for her. So she hasn't got that expense, nothing. So now she's got no expense, he's got so much. That 100,000 is too little for him in our time. She has 50,000 she bought. When she gets married, she's going to get 50,000 mehr. So she's already gone up to 100,000. He came down to 50,000. She doesn't have to buy anything. 100,000 is hers. Husband has to see to everything. So who is the winner there? Who is it? So our Shaykh Rahmatullah Ali say that half what she gets, in our example 50,000, is a gift for her. She doesn't deserve it. That if her nephew's niece come to visit, she'd also like to buy them an ice cream, a chocolate. So she wouldn't like for a small things to run to the husband, give me so much money, I want to buy this, give me that. She would like to spend from her own money. So it's a gift for her. But then again you see further in inheritance that Allah Ta'ala himself says that the children, their needs are there. And for their shares are bigger than the parents' share. The normal command of Quran Sharif is that the rights of the parents are very high. Very, how much is stressed? Mother's rights, father's rights, clearly stressed everywhere. But in the distribution of inheritance, their shares are small. Children's shares are big. Now, what's the highest that Allah has? Oh. Allah knows who will get more. There, the children share it more because they have to live their life. The parents are old now, they are now on the verge of leaving the dunya. So their shares, Allah made them smaller because they don't need now so much money. The children have to live their lives and they have to establish themselves. So what a perfect kitab, Quran Sharif, whether you take it from inheritance point of view, from any scientific point of view, from any point of view, deen's point of view, there is no kitab that can manage with that can come anywhere close to the Quran Sharif. So anyway, we were discussing it. Allah Ta'ala commanded the man first that look after your gazelle. And separately, which is against the trend of the Quran, to show the great importance of looking after the gazelle, Allah gave the woman separately, وَقُلْ لِلْمُؤْمِنَاتِ يَغْضُضْنَ مِنْ أَبْصَارِهِنَّ وَيَحْفَظْنَ مِنْ فُرُوجِهِنَّ. So that is what ذَلِكَ أَزْكَى لَكُمْ. If you want purity, also it comes clearly in the Hadith Sharif, if you want your woman to stay pure and clean, then see that you stay pure and clean. Usually men want to find fault. Almost every man accuses his wife that she's got an affair with somebody, she has committed adultery, etc. And this is, and they see dreams also like that. And according to dream interpretation, you yourself are guilty, that's why you are seeing that dream. It's not your wife, you are seeing your wife is involved in an affair or something. But it's you yourself you are involved. It's a reflection of your own condition. So, if the man remains pure and clean, so many instances that one family, they had adopted a child, a small child, but very intelligent, very lovable child. He grew up in the family and he was like a family member. One, and the husband was a jeweler. So one day, this boy, he was now about 18, 20. And he had bad intentions with his own stepmother, which wasn't his mother, and he made advances to her. She got a shock. She ran out of the house. When the husband came, she said, what happened today? This boy, what a good boy. What good akhlaq. And he's noble. He's every, but today suddenly, he asked, what time this happened? So she told him the time. She said, that time, he said, that time, a lady customer came to him in the shop. And she wanted a bangle, a ring, and I put it on for her. And I got bad intentions with her. The effect was immediately at home, somebody had bad intentions with his wife. And who? The person who they trusted the most. So our actions, jaise karni, waise bharni. How you do, so the reaction of that amal is. Na maane to kar ke diye. If you don't believe, do, and you see it will happen. Jannat bhi hai, jahannam bhi hai, na maane to mar ke liye. Jannat is a reality absolute. Jahannam is an absolute reality. It is no dream. It is no figment of the thought. It's a hardcore reality. If you don't want to believe it, die, and then you'll see. And then you'll have to say, then now I bring Iman. Give me another chance. Let me go back in the dunya. But of course, that will never be done. Now is the time. And value of Iman is to believe on the words of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, on the command of Allah. To see Allah and bring Iman, that the most hardcore atheist will also do. But this is what is required to bring Iman on the word of Allah, Nabi, that without him. On one occasion, Nabi alayhi salatu wa salam went out and he saw a person selling a horse, a non-Muslim, and Nabi alayhi salam liked the horse, so he asked him, why did you sell me this horse? He said, no problem, I've got it for sale. And they made the price, agreed, everything. So Nabi alayhi salatu wa salam said, give me time to go home and bring the money. So he said, no problem, I'll wait here. That was common in those days. So Nabi alayhi salatu wa salam went. In the meantime, another person came, a non-Muslim. And he said, oh, are you not selling this horse? He said, see, it was for sale, but it has been just sold now. So he asked how much. He told him, he said, I'll give you so much more, sell it to me. And for them, they know promises that are made, that you have made an agreement, that doesn't matter. So he said, but I've already sold it to Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So he said, but try to get out of this state and send it to me, I'm giving you so much more. So he said, okay. He was a non-Muslim, he said, okay. So when Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam came, he asked him, in your sharia, in your deen, if there's a dispute between people, how do you resolve your dispute? So Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam said, the person who's making the claim must bring a witness. And if you can't bring a witness, the person, the defendant, must take qasam. That it is not like this or it is like this, you must take qasam. So he said that I didn't sell you that horse. And now if you want to, you have to bring a witness first. Just then Hazrat Khuzaymah, radiallahu ta'ala anhu, one sahabi, not absolutely sure I remember the name correctly, he came past and he saw this little taking place. So he asked, what's happening? So this is the case. They say, I give evidence that that Nabi alayhi salam bought this horse for so much money. So once the evidence was there, the case is, the matter is resolved, finished. So the horse went to Nabi alayhi salam. Then Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam asked him, you were not present. How come you gave evidence? How you became a witness for me? He says, when you told us Allah revealed Quran, we didn't see that. You told us about Allah. We didn't, such a big matter. What a horse. What if you tell us that you bought the horse, where will you ever lie? Out of the question, 100% I'll give evidence and I'll give it over and over again. The amount of trust that we have got, that is what, the trust that, Allah, that we haven't seen Allah. Allah, Nabi told us. Who is Allah? Even if we knew there is Allah, but all what little we know about Allah, who taught us? Hazrat Allah, Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. The favors, the ihsanat of Nabi alayhi salatu wa sallam. The laws of Shariat that he has taught us. And how he went on one occasion, Hazrat Fatima radiallahu ta'ala anha, they were hungry. About 2 days they had nothing to eat. Hazrat Ali earned something. She brought flour, she made roti, she cooked. And then she thought, before she put it in her mouth, she thought, my father, I know, he also, he's always in difficulty. Let me go and find out from him first whether he has eaten. So she went with some roti and she asked, she said, Hazrat, we were so hungry, 2 days we ate nothing. Hazrat Ali radiallahu brought some flour and made roti and food and if I want to offer it to you, she said, Nabi alayhi salam said, yes, I will also, 4 days I haven't eaten. You people haven't eaten 2 days, 4 days I haven't eaten. And Nabi alayhi salatu wa salam, mujahada, and poverty was not by force, it was by choice. He preferred to live like that. Not that he didn't have or he couldn't have, but it was by choice. So then, Father Fatima cried profusely, my father, 4 days hunger. Today one rosa of ours, and what a theory we ate. and we know what iftari we're going to get. We got no worry, but still this roza catches up with us. So then Nabi said, "Oh Fatima, our objective is not this dunya. We are in this world to save ourselves from Jannah, to save the people of the world from Jahannam. What is this hunger? This hunger is nothing. What is this 1-2 roti? That is nothing here for us to worry. We have to worry for to save ourselves from Jahannam, the adab of the qabr, the adab of Jahannam. We are our duty to save the people of the world. We have to sacrifice for them. But today we, that we in Nabi alayhi salam sacrifice everything for us. And we are the culprit destroying the deen of Nabi al-Islam. The kuffar are doing it, but we ourselves, our wedding, our dressing, our lifestyle, we have given full preference to Western way of life, Western thinking of life. Our mind, even if we become alims and muftis and qari, but our minds are still that Western way. To take that out, it's a job, it's a real job to take it out. Once we were with Maulana Mu'inuddin, who was the Sheikh of the Hadith of Darunun Zakaria from Muradabad. For some time he thought he was the Sheikh of the Hadith. There was a Tabliza Ijtima in Port Elizabeth, Cape Town. We also went and it happened, we were together. And I was translating for him. After all the translation, everything, we met the Imam also, there was some discussion. Then he told me this Western influence, once you go through it, especially just till you have done matric, then your mind is fully a Western mind. And then his husna gun, his muhabbat, he says, unless the person is like Maulvi Abdul Hamid, that you scrubbed it out completely and you took it out again. He said, otherwise it is there and it doesn't go out. It does go out if you make the right effort. And we have the sohbat and Allah's fazl, it can go out. While we are on that subject, about in the 1994, when in the New South Africa, there was a seminar held at government level about the future of education in South Africa. What line we should go, what education there was. Every government, the education is controlled by the government, so that all must be stay under the government. They must serve the government and serve the purposes of the country from a materialistic. The country must grow. For them, what is growth? Financial growth. More businesses, more money, stock exchange is busy, and all the shops are busy. That is what they want. So this whole school, the whole curriculum is set up according to that. And then in that, one question came about, that why are we still teaching Shakespeare at school? Shakespeare is the old English, Victorian English, thou, thee, thy. Nobody speaks like that. Today I thou and thee and thy. Nobody speaks that. All medical books, all engineering books, textbooks, are all in modern English. So why are we still speaking, teaching Shakespeare, which is Victorian English, that old English? So they make no bones about it. They say we teach Shakespeare because when we give a matric certificate to somebody, this was 94, how many 30 years ago, that was that we have now, we are satisfied that this person has got a modern Western Christian mindset. That is what that matric certificate means, that you have got a modern Western Christian mindset. And now it is changed, that you have got a modern Western atheist mindset, not a Christian mindset, a atheist mindset. That is when they give the certificate. And if you are, I don't know now, but when we were studying, and many times I found out after that, but now I don't know. You don't pass matric until you pass English. It's a condition, you must pass English. And in English, there are three subjects, literature, grammar, and composition, essay writing, letter writing, composition. And the major mark is of literature. And the major you study in literature is Shakespeare, Milton, Holmes. That is what you have to study. And when you study, and that is intensive study. You have to, other books there are, but you don't have to study them intensively. These books you have to study intensively. and you have to pass them. What does that mean? Automatically, without them telling you, you burn the midnight oil. Till 2 in the morning, you study Shakespeare. You study Holmes. You study Milton. All. And they said that to produce that mind which we want, a Western modern mind, and a Christian mind, atheist mind, we got nothing better than what Shakespeare's teachings are. So you are voluntarily at night, you are staying awake till 12, 1 o'clock. You are studying, and you have said at exam paper as they want you. You want marks. So you're not going to say what you are convinced about in your heart. But what they want you to say, you are going to write those things. So that you get your mark, you get higher mark. So in the process, you are without realizing, indoctrinating yourself in order to pass and to get your matric certificate. So this is what their teachings are. We have to be very much on our guard. It isn't a matter of just halal and haram, and the eating of it also. And with regard to that also, the halal, haram we were discussing. And though we didn't discuss it now, but at length we have discussed it, in people who went, not one, two people, so many people who made research. When I was with the Jamiat at one time, and our president was Mufti Sanjali Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh, our ustad also, he sent me also to go in, and I also went for one of the inspections. And the slaughterer has to slaughter between 35 and 40 chickens a minute. So 40 times he has to say Bismillahi Allahu Akbar. Sitting comfortably, yes. Now we got Rosa, but even if you have eaten, your stomach is full, your sleep is full, everything. Try and repeat continuously Bismillah Allahu Akbar, Bismillah Allahu Akbar, Bismillah Allahu Akbar, Bismillah Allahu Akbar. Okay, whether you can say 35, 40 times a minute. And the slaughtering under stress. He's got his uniform on, he's got a mask on, the blood is flying there, and he's standing, he's not sitting. And those chickens are just moving, and he has to just slaughter. And they have signed affidavits there, given, we can't manage. On every chicken, we can't say Bismillah. And they are chicken, and we cannot ever guarantee that we are splitting the three of the four vessels, which must be split. We can't give that. Because we just want Bismillah, 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 Bismillah. You look at how tired won't you get. And he's working an 8-hour shift. 1 hour he gets for his lunch and that. Besides that, and they alternate. One slaughters the chicken, then the next chicken, he misses it, and another slaughter. Like that. But the average work of 35 chickens a minute to 40 chickens. It's impossible to slaughter so much. And then those chickens that have been stunned, and all can't withhold that level. The stunning is at one level. But the chickens, everyone, resistance is at a different level. So all can't resist it at that. Some are already dead. And they cannot pick up. They have got a person in charge to see that if there are any dead chickens. But they cannot control it. It's out of control. So these chickens which are from the big slaughter houses, and they are stunned, and they are put in that boiling water, and even then, if still the muftis even give permission, but it's the last thing that the person will want to put in his mouth. Any person who is conscious, and all what has been done, especially with the takeaway, just with all the spices, it has been made so tasty. And today we are dying for the spice which is just off the tongue, the 3-4 centimeters. One good friend of ours, he passed away. Allah gave Jannah. They got family in the UK, so he was going to visit them. So they told you must bring the sauces from steer. So he was very angry about it. They, from there, they ordered him, I must bring 6 bottles of the sauce from steer. But just that taste, the chutney, the sauce, etc. And what they put in when they make it. And in the process of their making the chicken, they put such ingredients which arouse your sexual desire. And they have music playing. So, because their object is to make us look like human beings but animals, mixing with women and becoming, and we know what is happening. What things are happening out there, boys, girls, men, women, and nudist camps, The last things which could be conceived of man are actually all happening. And all this stems from the food. And so our eyes, we have to look after our tongue. And yeah, we are, Allah has put us that we must not be saving ourselves. Our duty to save the whole world. كنتم خير أمة أخرجت للناس تأمرون بالمعروف وتنهون عن المنكر. We're not doing any amr bil ma'ruf, and anyone who wants to do it, we say it's causing division in the ummah. He's breaking the unity of the ummah. In other words, let the whole ummah go headlong into Jahannam. Don't talk, praise them about it. MashaAllah, they're all doing very good work. And anyone who wants to stop the caste from going to Jahannam, he's dividing the ummah. He's breaking the peace and the unity of the ummah. Where have we gone? What level is our thinking? And today, the ulama discourage also. And the ulama, they take effect. This should not affect them. La yakhafuna lawmata lahiq. If Allah blesses with that yaqeen, that we have to save the ummah. How Nabi alayhi salam put the sun in my right hand, put the moon in my left hand, I cannot deserve from this. It's my duty to bring the heart, and to bring the heart into a nation that was completely engulfed, that was completely riddled with, like bullets you are riddled with idol worship. And Nabi alayhi salam took them out and made color come up. From the very roots he took out idol worship from the Arabs. All the big, big idols they had. For centuries they were worshipping, had them all broken, no namu nishan, nothing of those idols. What an effort it must have been. And today when the Arabs themselves are bringing that back again, and when the Muslims themselves are keeping quiet, there's no possibility for a Muslim, for an ummati to pani pherna, to wash the efforts of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam away. That all his efforts, that was just, he did it when he did it. Then today I can't, my name, my comfort, my respect, I can't allow my respect to be tarnished. My name, my rest, my comfort, my honor, the gifts I get, the presence, the respect I get, I can't know. The deen can go, doesn't matter. But my respect, my comfort, that can't go. That can never happen. And the deen of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, deen is more beloved to Allah than Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam. For the sake of deen, Allah made Nabi alayhi salam go through what and what. What mujahada inside, in Makkah Sharif, in Medina Sharif, all for the sake of deen. And deen is flounded in front of my eyes, but it means nothing to me. Even my own deen is, and if you don't stop somebody else, 100% you, not your children, you're going to get involved. And you're going to become mild on the subject. What's going to happen to your children is worse, you can't imagine. And if you are true, you love your children, you'll never allow deen to be, any harm must come in deen. Otherwise, what will happen to them? Without deen, the children are not children. They become animals, they're not human beings. Allah give us tawfiq. Inshallah, we'll carry on.